Blog Talk Radio.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
For African people, nothing important happens without a light issue. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of light issue. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization. And they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us, so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors, because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization, and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diaspora, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that describes them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born. For they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, but they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
Listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank, and they are operating on the Block Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com, go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening, 6 o'clock, Warriors Way Radio, continuing the fight.
All right, this is your brother, Kwasi Kraft, Warriors Way, continuing the fight. We're going to be talking about the war in Ukraine, what's going on, you know. Has the world gone mad? You know, what's Putin up to? What's he want? You know, there's a lot of questions. And so this is what we want to discuss tonight. I have a special guest, Stacey Orr Smith, my guest host. So we're going to start this conversation in a few. But before we get going with that, we're going to do an ancestral profile. And the ancestral profile is going to be on Butterfly McQueen. Butterfly McQueen, she was born Velma McQueen, January 7th, 1911, December 22nd. She also succumbed to illness and passed at December 27th, 1995. Now, she was an American actress, originally a dancer. McQueen was first appeared in the film as Pressy in Gone with the Wind, and in 1939. Now, she was unable to attend the movie premiere because it was held at a whites-only theater. Now, often typecast as a maid, she said, "I didn't mind playing a maid the first time because I thought that was how you got into the business. But after I did the same thing over and over, I resented it, and I didn't mind being funny, but I didn't like being stupid." She continued as an actress in the film into the 1940s, and then she moved to television acting in the 1950s. She won in a 1980 a Daytime Emmy Award for her performance on the ABC After School Special episode, Seven Wishes of a Rich Kid. In her early education, she was born in Tampa, Florida, as Velma McQueen, and she was the daughter of Wallace McQueen, a dock worker and Mary McQueen, who worked as a maid. Now, after her parents separated, Velma lived with her mother, Augusta, in Augusta, Georgia, now, where she was educated by nuns at a convent, and she had planned to become a nurse until her high school teacher suggested that she try acting. Now, McQueen initially studied with Janet Collins and danced with the Venezuela Jones Negro Youth Group. And around this time, she acquired the nickname Butterfly, which is a tribute to constantly moving her hands for her performance in the Butterfly Ballad in a production of Midsummer Night's Dream. Now, disliking her birth name, she later legally changed to Butterfly McQueen. Now, she performed with dance troupe of Catherine Durham before making her professional debut in George Abbott Brown Sugar. Now, McQueen was appearing as a student in Broadway comedy, What a Life, in 1938, when she was spotted by Kate Brown, a talent scout, Dave Sisnick, in a production of Gone with the Wind. Now, eventually released in 1939, now, Brown recommended that McQueen audition in the film, and Sisnick saw her screen test. He never considered anyone else. McQueen was cast in the role and would become the most identifiable prince, a simple-minded housemaid. She uttered the famous words, "Oh, Miss Scarlet, I don't know nothing about birthing babies." And her distinctive high-pitched voice was described by a critic as the itchy little voice fading over the far horizon of comprehension. Now, while the role was well known to audience, McQueen did not enjoy playing the part, as she felt it was demeaning to African Americans. She uncredited this bit part as a sales assistant in the woman's 1939 film After Gone with the Wind, but released before it. Now, she also played Butterfly in Rochester's Niece and Mary Livingston's maid in the Jack Benny radio program for a time during World War II. She appeared in an uncredited role in Mildred Pierce in 1945 and played a supporting role in A Duel in the Sun in 1946. And by 1947, she had grown tired of ethnic stereotypes. She was required to play, and she ended her film career during World War II. McQueen frequently appeared as a comedian on the Air Force Services broadcast Jubilee, and many of these broadcasts are now available on the internet and archives. She did go to school. She attained her bachelor's degree. And, you know, she, McQueen was an original version in the stage musical, The Wiz. And when she debuted in Baltimore in 1974, she played the Queen of Field and Mice, Field Mice, a character from the original L. Frank Baum novel, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. However, when the show was revised prior to going to Broadway, Miss McQueen's role was cut by incoming director. In her personal life, she never married. She didn't have any kids. She lived in New York for several months in Augusta, Georgia during the winter. And in July 1983, she was awarded McQueen $60,000 in the judgment stemming from a lawsuit she filed against two bus terminal security guards. McQueen was sued, had sued for harassment after she claimed that the security guard accused her of being a pickpocket and a vagrant while she was at Washington, D.C. Greyhound bus terminal in April 1979. Democrats, she supported Adela Stevenson's campaign during the 1952 presidential election. In 1975 to age 64, McQueen received a bachelor's degree in political science from the City College of New York. McQueen died at the age of 84, December 22nd, 1995, at Doctor's Hospital in Augusta, and some burns sustained from a kerosene heater she attempted to light. It malfunctioned, burst into flames. McQueen donated her body for medical science. and she was remembered by the Freedom from Religious Foundation in her will. So that's our ancestor profile on Butterfly McQueen. Okay, Miss Stacy, are you here with us?
Yes, I'm right here. I was engrossed in what you were saying about Miss McQueen, but she was, you know, I'm so glad you picked her for the highlight today, because she really was one that opened doors for so many. And then to be, you know, just typecast into the roles of buffoonery. And then she just said, you know what, this is not what I'm going to do. This is not worth it. This is not
right.
What I want to portray. I think you know, she's so overlooked by many, but she's definitely one to be
right.
admired, and she's just really, really.
Yeah. You know, I when I was looking her up and I read about her and just listening to, because you can look at some old film clips, because like I said, they're in the archive, and, you know, she had a high-pitched voice. And I remember in the movie Gone with the Wind, she had stated that, you know, like when they slapped her, and, you know, when they practiced that, and she let them know before they did that in the movie that it's not going to be a real slap here. Otherwise, we're going to be fighting. And so she was a small
exactly.
woman, but she was very, very opinionated and willing to walk away from whatever if she felt she was being disrespected. And so in a lot of these movies, you know, when black actors, especially back in those days, if they got hit, hurt, or this and that was okay. A lot of the white actors didn't care, you know, but she made it known that that wasn't going to be happening with her. So I thought that was pretty unique, among other things. And so anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Ukraine. And, you know, one of the things that I was looking at something, and I'm not hearing a whole lot about this Brittany Griner. Am I saying her name? Griner. No, she's a United States citizen, you know, and they're playing on a Russian team. And the reason why a lot of these girls, they go to these other countries because they don't make a lot of money in the United States. They make a lot more money playing in other places. So that's one of the reasons these women NBA teams and players, you know, they play all over and they play in these foreign leagues and so forth. So they make more money than they make here in the United States. And so that
right.
was one of the things
excellent.
That we talked about.
It's an excellent opportunity for our athletes. If you can't get in here, you can, just like Butterfly McQueen, I'm going to take my talent somewhere else. But like you said,
right.
I was reading a little bit about what was going on with Ms. Griner, and was it that they would not let her out
right.
of the country?
You know, because, because of she had some drugs, some marijuana pair from it was some ointment and some other things that are illegal in the United States, and I guess she wasn't apprised of that information, afforded that information so Stacy, can you hear me?
Yes, yeah. No, I was listening to you because
okay.
I thought that they wouldn't let her out. So she just had some therapeutic, you know, probably some CBD rub, or, you know,
right.
and then, but I mean, I wonder why they'd wait till she's trying to evacuate. I'm sure that, you know, the team doctor knew that she was utilizing it, and they wait till it's a crisis not to let the woman out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and,
so,
you know, yeah, it was just something, everything that was done. But you're not hearing a lot of stuff on the news about what's going on with her. You know, it's not a priority. It's not an uproar in regard to this. And so that takes me to a lot of the other issues and things that are going on, you know, with the other citizens that are in Ukraine and the spiel they kind of put on it, you know. The news, the way they talk about them, you know, they're not the typical refugees. These are blue-eyed white people, you know, middle-class people, things of that nature. You know,
exactly.
And so, Go ahead.
No, I mean, as soon as all of this, because all of this happened, I just started thinking to myself that how they were painting it as a middle-class white crisis that we all need to rally around what's going
right.
on. Noah, what's going on there?
Yeah. You know, and that's just such a common scenario that we have these different things going on. I'm just going to – I want you to just listen to something. I'm going to regards to what they were talking about, what's going on. And this is the news. Just listen to this.
Traditional evacuation protocol during wartime prioritizes women, children, and the elderly.
Man, these people left without taking the block.
But as Russia continues its advance in Ukraine,
what's going on in
Ukraine? Racism
is
not far behind. Twitter, where many African students in Ukraine have been documenting their journey westward, has been awash with videos and tweets of reported racism.
And in these videos, they're showing people trying to get on the train in Poland
being denied
boarding
on the train, believed to be evacuating civilians in Ukraine away from the advance of Russia from the east. No verbal reason is given for the denial. But moments later, a white woman is allowed to board the same train. This Twitter user, named Inzekiev, believed to be a Nigerian international student, says priority boarding on trains along racial lines is common. His Twitter feed has documented his journey from Ukraine onwards to Poland. According to his account, the crowds of people who have braved cold weather, queues, and journeys full of fear to make it to the train boarding in Poland have been racially discriminated against in a series of events, which include a van being driven into the direction of the crowd and a gun being thrown at them. However, on the Poland side of the border, there's been a suggested decline in reports of racism from civilians. But it is important to note that complaints are predominantly from civilians still in Ukraine. Mainstream media has also shown itself to be an example of the role race and unconscious racism plays in the coverage of the Russian-Ukraine conflict and the racialized depiction of the victims therein.
But this isn't a place, with all due respect, you know, like Iraq or Afghanistan that has seen conflict raging for decades. You know, this is a relatively civilized, relatively European, I have to use those words carefully, because a city where you wouldn't expect that or hope that it's going to happen.
Just looking at them, the way they're dressed, these are prosperous, I'm going to use the expression, these are prosperous middle-class people. These are not obviously refugees trying to get away from areas in the Middle East that are still in a big state of war. These are not people trying to get away from areas in North Africa. They look like any European family that you would live next door to.
Well, what role does geography play in this? A 13-year Harvard University study as a project in physics found that many people in Central and Eastern Europe associate negative thoughts with black faces. According to this map, which illustrates the findings of that study, redder countries, including Ukraine and Russia, show higher average racial bias, which is reflective of the recent reports of racism from the black civilians there. Online debates in this matter have denied reports of racism. arguing that countries and nationals are expected to prioritize doing emergency evacuations. Ukrainian men aged between 18 and 16 years old, for example, are reportedly not allowed to leave. But in among the confusion and uncertainty, few things are clear. This temperance is not dependent on race. Race is not a measure of civilization. But according to those accounts, in among the guns, missiles, and tanks, even during war, race is still a weapon. And if somebody I can thank you, all right, you.
Well, what do you think, Stacey? Any thoughts?
Well, I think it's a formula that they're using. They use the marketing to make people us less than human. They've been doing it for years and years. So, you know, they're saying, you know,
yeah,
relatively civilized. Then we turn around and look, and they're not letting the Nigerians, you know,
right,
into the, you know, flee the fighting. So it's a formula that societies have been using forever. First, you know, they dehumanize us, and then, you know, and fail to protect us.
Yes, that's so common. Like you said, they've always done that. And when we look at a lot of the simple things, I was talking to a young man last night. And he does a lot of stuff, activism throughout the city. And he was telling me about a lot of the things that he does to try to curb the violence and help treat people with the trauma that you're dealing with when you deal with police. And he was talking about how we should, you know, educate our black men and women on what to do when they deal with police. And my thoughts behind that, and I said, I understand it, because he said, well, I'm an educator, and this is what I think, because we don't really want to go to war with them like that. But if we have to, you know, I'm prepared to do those things as well. And, again, I'm not advocating violence or anything like that, but at the same time, you know, when somebody unnecessarily just kill somebody, and then they happen to be someone that's paid to protect or serve, and they happen to seem to consistently make these mistakes with black and brown people. And that goes on all over. So when they talk about what's going on in Ukraine, and when the news people talk about it, they want you to feel really bad, because this is happening to white people. These are different people. These are well-dressed people. I mean, they're intelligent. They got good jobs and so forth. I mean, it was just a lot of racist remarks that they were just putting out there. There were some other things that, and then I heard another interview and I lost it. I wanted to get back to it, where some students were not allowed to get on the train, and it took them several days to get to a location. And when they got to this location where they could cross, they told them that they weren't going to let them in. And if they get hit with bullets, you know, it's their fault, because they don't need to be trying to get in. They need to go back. They need to stay. But you don't hear a lot of that coverage. And so you don't hear the news people talking about it. So when I see that, and I'm like, why? Why aren't they saying anything? Are you guys hiding something? You know, you don't want to know how ugly this is. They tell us how ugly in what the thing that Putin is doing in regards to with war crime. You know, and right now Biden is talking about. Well, not talking about it. He doesn't want to create World War III by doing this non-fly zone and stuff. But, you know, they got to do something. Or do they? I don't know.
It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all smoke and mirrors. And we know that the media is all about money. And they think they have to show it as white and shiny in order to get the money, you know, for people to watch, to care, so that they get those,
right,
those ratings, And then America has gotten the world so conditioned to care only about white people, white issues. You know, America has the world conditioned for that. That, oh, if it's important to someone white, it must be important. If they, you know, if they started
right.
to, if they did it any other way, like all of these other things going on in Africa, you know, genocide, left and right. And
yes.
why is it not widely reported? Well, you know what? It's not going
right.
to make money because they've conditioned the world, not just America. America has outsourced racism to the world. You know, that's our biggest export, racism against dark, black, colored, whatever, people. So they know
right.
that formula works. That wars make money. They need the money. And they make it, they prioritize white in order to get all this white liberal guilt around it. It's a formula. So, I barely listen to it.
Yeah. And you know,
and then
the
when the gas, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Go
you
ahead.
Know, one of the things I was going to say is that, you know, they, you know, I heard, I don't know if you ever listened to Dr. Umar, but he was talking about that shouldn't even be one of our concerns. Because we always have these bleeding hearts, and we support, and we want to fight for them and do all this. And yeah, they'll let us die for them and do everything else. But look at what's going on to the black and brown people. I mean, they're specifically targeting these black and brown people during a wartime. And I'm like, man, you got time to point out racism during this, you know, where we're just trying to help people. And then the other thing is, Most of their revenue is from these students that come up here from other countries. You know, so that's where Ukraine makes most of their money.
Exactly.
And now they're treating these people this way. And so
right.
they were saying that's like $500 million of their yearly income from these students coming there. And now they're being treated like this, so. Go ahead.
But I knew it. And then they want to depend these gas prices on that war. When the gas prices, they wanted to get us all wrapped up in the money of this, you know, support this war,
right.
you know, once it gets down, that gas ain't going down. The U.S. gets 1% of its gas from Ukraine. So, no, we don't need to beat any... in any part of their war. It don't serve us 1%. That's just greed and marketing on
right.
the United States. We circulated that lie among ourselves to help people say, oh, poor Ukraine. And you know what? That's their war. It ain't got nothing to do with our gas prices. 1% of our gas comes from
right.
Ukraine. Now, does it topple over into the Arab market? You know, maybe, you know, war here might affect a little bit, but not affecting it to the point that our gas has risen because of it at this point. That's just a fallacy.
You know, one of the other things that they're saying in regards to the prices, they were saying because of the pandemic, people, and now that the boost, that people are out on the streets more, working back to work, and so they're using more fuel, their food, all of this. So we have a shortage because of the drop off, and now all of a sudden this large pickup, and they aren't ready for that. And I mean, what's your thoughts on that? You know, in regards to these prices. You know, they're saying food, everything is just going to go up so much more.
You know, food scarcity, because, you know, I go in the grocery store today, and a lot of the things that I normally can get are not there. You know, and they're saying, get your food now, but they haven't pinpointed for me as to why, you know, what is causing that. Is it because people aren't working? Is it because people can't get to work because of the gas?
Right.
But I have seen that is going on. But again, we know that in order to raise prices, we may have to create a scarcity. You know, that's what they do.
Right.
They create an artificial scarcity to justify raising prices.
Right.
So I
see that because I'll drive around from the north side because I live on the south side of the city, and I go to the north side where in inner city north side where people make less money, and gas prices are like 20 to 30 cents higher, and I don't understand why it would be that much higher, you know, because I talked to a guy that operates his service station, and I asked him why his prices seem to be higher than other places, you know, a couple blocks away. And he said, well, we have people that survey and they drive around the area, and then we price our price based on the other service stations in our immediate area. And, you know, I go four blocks away and I'm paying 9 cents less. You know, so I know that you're not doing
right.
that for whatever reasons he wants to put out there that this is what they do, you know. And then one of the things that they did say, you know, they talked about with these prices in some of these news conferences, and they said, you know, they're checking on people that are what do you call it, price gouging, you know, they're upping the price, you know. I mean, but, you know, they've always been doing it, just like, you know, they charge you tax on non-taxable items. You know, that happens all the time in these convenience
exactly.
stores, service stations.
Anything that they're allowed to do, they will do. But as far as going around and looking at other prices to figure it out, that might be true, but they're all connected. In the inner city, all of those guys. So going around and looking six blocks away, they're looking at their brother's store because that's how they multiply their generational wealth is that they come, they buy, they help the other one. So all these are connected.
Right.
And you want to talk about not a conglomerate but a monopoly. They may, on paper, they may look like they're competitors, but they are not competitors. So they can say, oh, yeah, well, we looked around a four-block radius. Like, well, that's your store over there. That's your brother's store. That's the one you gave him seed money to open. You know, so don't tell me you're going around looking. You're looking at your stuff. But as far as in the black community, what we allow is what happens. I mean, or it's like these corner stores. The disrespect that, you know, in the years past, I don't know what they're doing now. I haven't been in a corner store in so long. I don't want no food poisoning. There's a level of disrespect when children go in, when adults go in.
Yes.
You know, they don't even respect you. So to think that they're going to price you fair, they can't even talk to you fair. You know, keep it moving. Find a black store.
Right. Well, you know, remember the young lady, young girl, I think she was 13 or 14 years old. She was killed. This was in New York. And she got into an argument with a lady, it was an Asian lady, over something that she was buying, and she accused her of stealing something, and the girl got mad, and I think she threw something, maybe the candy or whatever it was, and then the Asian lady picked up a gun, and I think this girl was leaving the store or whatever. She ended up shooting her and killing her.
Are you sure
that
wasn't in Los Angeles?
Did I say Los Angeles?
No, you
I
said New York,
what I
but
said.
I think that's what.
Oh, yeah.
Started.
I'm sorry.
Right. No.
The
that's
Rodney
what,
King.
Yeah, no, and I just recently.
That was before.
Right, that's what started the Rodney King. But all of those, you know, the eruption. But, yeah, that level of disrespect. The child hadn't stole nothing. The lady, you know, it's just.
I'm just thinking when I was in high school, there was a corner store when I went to high school in Milwaukee, and there was a corner store owned by some foreigners, And the young girls used to go in there to pick up stuff, high school girls. And these guys would corner these girls, and they would be filling up on them and stuff like that. And, you know, and they were like, well, they were trying to steal something, and we caught them. You know, they would say that, and some of the guys from the football team, and were like, hey, man, leave these girls alone, let them go and stuff like that. And some of the girls, they did take things because, you know, if they got out, no big deal. And if they did, you know, he would just steal on them or something to that effect. And and then, you know, they could leave. And, you know, and I mean, it's just this ugly stuff that goes on in these places and these stores and in our community. And it's generally not people that look like us that are in charge and that are running these businesses. And that's just so common. And then when you look, like you said, they demonize us. So we can't, you know, so people don't care what happens to us. And you see that all over the world. And so when you talk about all this violence and how they just marginalize the hurt and pain that happens with us and say that we're, you know, I hear this so many times, and I'll just ask you your thoughts on this. You ever hear somebody say that we're our worst enemy? And if they say that, what would your response be?
You know what? I don't believe that. Unless they're saying humans are worse than me. Yeah, human beings, they deprave, they get each other. But as far as the black community, I don't subscribe to that.
Right.
But I have heard it. We're our worst enemy. They say that. But you know what? They say that when they start to say, well, you're not helping yourselves. But you have to disconnect the level of black on black violence and the institutional white violence. You know, you got violence that's ingrained within our government, within our social construct, but y'all want to look at the black on black violence and say, oh, we're our worst enemy. No. And a lot of that violence within our community is situational. You know, they need us in poverty. But once you put, you know, a large group into a distressed place, it becomes something that is negative. But the enemy is the people that created it,
right,
in my opinion. That's the worst enemy. I think a lot of what goes on in the black community when it's black on black, if our community hasn't been squeezed and terrorized, so, you know, because that goes to your mental health. Yes, those people have mental health, it's community trauma. The cause of the community trauma is the institutional racism. So when you have violence, quote-unquote, black-on-black violence, quote-unquote, we're our worst enemy, it is not generated from the fact that we are our worst enemy. It comes from the fact that we're an oppressed society by design. They need an underculture. They need it in order for their ways to profiteering from that. So no, the enemy is the cause of this community trauma, which they work very hard at traumatizing us to the point of these behaviors. That's just my opinion, you know. I just study it casually, you know. I ain't written no books or nothing, but you know, my house was in the inner city, and then I grew up, you know. I watched a corner store owned by a black man named Frank, and he was there for years, and it was safe, you know, because my grandmother lived in that house.
Go across the street
with some money and get her something. It was clean. The food was not something where you would get toenail poisoning from eating. It was safe. It was clean. It was respectable. He knew the kids. The kids knew him. If he had a problem with the kid, what'd he do? He'd come out. He'd walk up the street to their mama's house and say, Johnny was over here living off. You know, and then that was taken care of. And I watched that store for years. And then, you know, he passed away. The family sold it. And it's just a blight on that community.
Yes. Well, you know, one of the things that I was listening to something that Dr. Umar said, and I've heard this phrased by other people, you know, and they were talking about, we shouldn't be jumping and screaming about all the things that are going on in Ukraine. And because for every, like you said earlier, for all the war and fighting going on in Africa, and they don't mention that, and they're not getting the coverage, and they got these wars going on all the time, but they're not talking about it. And so is this,
not at
this,
all.
And so, but now this is important because we're talking white people, and
right.
I understand the extreme difference. But so many of us, I think, we've been so assimilated into trusting and accepting where we are, and just going along to get along with a lot of our white counterparts. And I just can't do that. I don't want anybody killed and dropping these bombs, and you know, I mean, that's horrible. You know, they're looking at, I mean, there were women, children, people killed in hospitals, dropping bombs at hospitals and civilian homes, all of that. And then they're even talking that he might use chemical warfare. And at what point, you know, are we going to say, hey, that's enough? Or are we going to, how are we going to help Ukraine? Is that our battle? You know, what's your
right,
thoughts
exactly.
on that?
Somebody is gonna have to show me more than through this news how this is my concern. How is it affecting me? Before I really just was like, you know, it did not. I just let it pass. There's so much going on here that I just let it pass. So perhaps it is somehow impending upon my life. But when they don't care about my people, I just, you know, maybe
right.
somebody cares. I don't want it to happen. I'm sorry the baby's
right.
dying. But my people
right.
said babies here dying. Y'all don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, I just had to let pass. I just had to say, you know what? Until you're showing me how this affects me and my community, which it probably does, but no one has shown me that because they're so busy wanting
right.
me to cry for these, what they say, these clean white people, clean,
right,
clean
right.
what they say, civilized people. I don't
yeah.
see it.
Yeah.
I cannot do it.
Right. And, you know, it puts a different taste in your mouth. And, again, we're not promoting this war and hatred and the killing of innocent people and, you know, and
not
this
at all,
is nothing.
Not at all, not promoting it.
This,
but
yeah.
I could not,
this
I don't
not,
have the energy
yeah.
to care.
Mm-hmm. I do understand that. And I tell you, it's a sad state of affairs. And I don't know how much we plan on doing. And when I say we, the United States, you know, is this going to be a war where our kids end up, you know, going to war?
My
you know,
kids ain't.
And
we will be in Canada.
Well,
I to call it a I can't even do patriotism right now. I can't even get my head to move to patriotism. Mm. Until they work on this community trauma, this targeting of young black men in the streets, I got a litany of things that I need them to work on as an American.
Right.
I'm not kneeling by no flag because I ain't even looking at y'all's flag. Y'all not even
right.
gonna get me to the point where I'ma even kneel because I don't recognize it in many cases. They have not shown me that I'm an American, so I can't even protest the flag because that flag don't even mean anything to me.
Hmm. Well, you know, I was thinking, you know, about the young lady, the Brittany Griner, you know, and I said,
oh,
and, is, and I'm just going to read two.
Of course, I'm going to have to drop out for 3 seconds.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Okay. While she's out, just a second. I'm just going to read something in regards to this Brittany Griner. Okay.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Hey, how you doing,
Stacey? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just going to read this.
I'm really good that I dropped off because I was on a rant.
No, that's okay. You know, like what you were saying in regards to I'm not really caring a whole lot about what's going on there. And we're not being ugly. And I understand it. I mean, I feel the same way. We're not hating on or not sympathetic to the horror of war and what's going on there to these people. I don't want that to happen to anybody. But at the same time, you know, you don't have that level of concern and care for the people here. And so, you know, if you're not moving to do that, but at the same time, you want me to jump on the bandwagon and put my life on the line for you, and you have showed countless times over and over again that you don't care about it at all. And
exactly,
so
when
exactly. I think about this Brittany Griner, this basketball player that played on the Olympic team, helped them win 2 gold medals. She's a 7-time women's NBA champion. And, all-star. And it's not a big uproar about, hey, let's get her out, because she's in a Russian prison right now. And, you know, and how is she being treated? She's in a Russian prison.
She's in a prison? Exactly.
Yes, they said that, they said that she may get, they're looking to let her, they report that she may get out May 19th, and then I'm reading in another incident where they talk about her, it says that she could be facing, it says Ms. Griner, 31, a 7-time World NBA All-Star center for the Phoenix Mercury, is being held on drug charges that could carry a sentence up to 10 years.
Right. The fact that they didn't send somebody over there to get that woman. They sent Bill Clinton to go get Lisa Ling's sister out of North Korea 8 years ago.
Yes.
Or Bill Clinton's vice president. They sent somebody. This is, I you know what? I do not care. They don't care about us. Michael Jackson wrote that song.
Right, right.
They don't care about us.
Right, 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 right. You know, there's another quote from Twitter. It says, it's kind of ironic that the pro-LGBTQ inclusive representation loving administration hasn't gotten Brittany Griner out of jail yet. Evidence shows that this wouldn't have happened with the American first president based on all past events. Evidence, you know, and
right.
you got so many.
Shoot, that LGBTQ, and that LGBTQ community, that is a huge political power horse. They have racial lines within that division.
Yes.
I should say racial division within that,
mm-hmm.
And they let you know y'all want to run around with this rainbow. Something go down, that rainbow umbrella ain't gonna get you if you black. Yeah, no.
Right,
they
right.
They're the only people they're gonna look after you.
You know, I worry about so much of what's going on because, you know, like you said, people get to pick and choose what they want to claim as important. And then they all frame it a certain kind of way. The news does that. They do a very good job of doing that because that's all they talk about, and that's all you hear, that's all you think about. I mean, it's a psychology in regards to why they talk a certain way, why they say and talk about this and play this over and over, because they want to, you know, overload you with this information so that you can't think of or about anything else. And so the strategy that they use, you know, I mean, and it appeals to your emotions.
you know, and then the other thing that we sit and we think, well, at least that kind of thing is not happening here. You know, and then you start thinking,
that
how
kind
good
of thing
Pennsylvania.
Right, yeah, we don't have, yeah, look how good, USA, USA, my babies can't walk down the street. Look how good this is, USA,
right.
USA. Nah, I don't want it to happen to anybody, you know, it's,
right.
But I only have so much bandwidth that I can focus. And, you know, there's no patriotism here. I got none.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I most definitely understand that. I do think you're there. So your number disappeared, so I'm sure something happened. But, yeah, I most definitely do understand that things happen a certain way for all type of reasons, and we just seem to be put off guard, you know, in our thinking and preparation for a lot of different things, and this is no different. And but like I said, we don't wish hurt or harm to anybody, but it's just an ugly situation that's going on in Ukraine. And I thought I lost you a second, Stacy, but I see you back.
What now?
I said I lost you for a second, but I see you're back now.
Yes, 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 I'm back. And my earbud went out. But, yeah, we don't wish anyone any ill will. If they can get themselves out of it, that's fine. But I will not be sucked into the marketing around it to make me cry tears for it when I got tears to cry here. I'm on the line here.
Mm, yeah, most definitely.
And it would be different if the government validated the line that I was on. Like, if they were doing something about the crises here, then you know what? I could say, okay, this is a worthwhile government to follow. But it's not. They haven't shown me that either.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I tell you, a lot of this fighting that's going on, it messes me up just thinking about it sometimes, because, like I said, we don't wish any hurt and harm to anybody, but you always hear something more and more every day. And, you know, at what point, you know, is this going to be a nuclear war? Or is that coming? Because Russia has nuclear power. And then and then China has nuclear power, and they have that relationship. So, you know, so when you think about all of this stuff with the United Nations, so I guess this is the only reason why I kind of think about a lot of this is because of what's supposed to be done, what the United Nations is all about, you know, where you got these countries that are divided, where some are understanding why Putin is doing what he's doing, and they're in support of him, and then there's other places that aren't in support of him, and you know, so what's that all about? You know, because you're trying to exactly just destroy the lives of, you know, people, and for what? I mean, what kind of control? What is this going to get? What do they have there? Is it natural resources that they want? Is this all about money? Is this dollars and cents? Is this, you know?
Money and power. And, you know, and even with the, when we go, one thing that this reminds me of is that Gaza Strip. They want us all to think that Israel should have all this land. You know, it's about land. And they want to get, that's another thing America wants to suck us into, that Israel should have all this land in the Gaza Strip. You know, that's another thing I don't really care about. But they've been taking land from us for ages.
Right. Yeah, it's...
So it's all marketing. It's all marketing to try to tell you what to care about. And then, yeah.
Right.
This nuclear thing. At this point, you know, I'm old. So you know what? If y'all just going to keep manipulating the story because we're scared of this nuclear thing, one person does it, we're all going.
Right. Right.
So they ain't going to scare me into action with that. That's a... Go ahead.
I mean, that really makes you feel so defenseless because, you know, it's about somebody pressing a button. And supposedly everybody knows what everybody else's capabilities are. And so if you do it, then we're going to, you know, I don't know how this works, but, you know, we've heard these conversations before. You heard when Trump was in office. People were worried because this guy is unstable and he has the hand on the buttons. He has the control.
Right.
You know.
And that was a little bit different with Trump because we were stupid enough to put him in office. You know, they got us scared of North Korea. They got us scared of Russia. But it's different because we put this fool in there. So that's why that bothered me more. It wasn't even a foreign entity. But at the end of the day, first person to do the buzzing, we all go. But y'all not going to suck me into your way of thinking for fear of this when I know.
Right. Right. I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, I think that everybody has what's needed to destroy so much of each other's country that, you know, the radiation and everything else that would come from that, the aftermath would probably wipe everybody out or make life just painfully rough. You know, it's just an ugly thing to think about because we're just in a different place when we talk about war. We don't want certain things to happen, but we have all this different type of power, this atomic power, you know, and we're always doing these tests, and we've tested so much where a lot of the land that we tested things on is so contaminated we can't use it for nurturing, fertilizing, and harvesting food, and so we can't do those things with that land anymore. We can't do that with a lot of our water, you know, because of it. But we're always testing and doing these different things. And I'm like, because we want to have the bigger message, the bigger this, the bigger that. And, you know, I'm not a man of war. You know, I've never fought in one in regards to, I'll put it this way. I fought in this war on the street. But in regards to, you know, the U.S. Army or Marines or whatever under the government situation, no, I haven't done that. I know people that have, and they don't like to talk about it. And, you know, because there's a lot of trauma behind just that thinking and then thinking about people that just lost.
A lot of trauma. But also, those people that go to war are not all men of war. That they're going out of, you know, with Vietnam, the disproportionate, you know, how they got our boys just to go. And then later years, they sold it as incentive. You know, we'll send you to school. You know, they go into urban districts, get our boys to sign up. So many people who have experienced that and fought for this country, you know, it was the only way to get a leg up, you know, a newer generation. And before that, with the draft, well, yeah, they come for the poor black men to fight for a country that would spit on them when they see them. So, you know, war is, it's traumatic, and in many ways, our people should not have been in that war fighting someone else's war.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on our first break. We're a little past 7, so we're going to break for a few minutes, and we'll be right back. And the line will be open for calls and comments. Our phone number is 516-418-5674. I repeat, 516-418-5674. Warriors Way, continuing the fight.
For African people, nothing important.
We'll
become a patron
Dr.
by going over to Patreon and adding...
We nurse our wounds.
Okay, we are back. I was trying to find something. Let me see if I can... Okay.
This here.
Okay, we are back from our break. This is Warriors Way, continuing the fight. Our lines are open. We're talking about the war in Ukraine, what's going on. Your questions, comments, you can call in at 516-418-5674. 516-418-5674. Warriors Way, continuing the fight. Okay, hey, Stacey, you back with me?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay, yeah. And so this is the time we may get some calls in regards to some other people that may have some questions and concerns about this. I tell you, one of the things that I think about right now, because, you know, when they did talk about, you know, what's going on in Ukraine, and they were saying, like, a lot of the people aren't leaving. You know, people that are 18, from 18 to 60, they basically have to stay and fight. People that are younger are allowed to leave, but also you have some that are even actually a little older that, you know, are going back to fight. And they're supposedly putting up a good fight. And there was some talk about some of the Russians wanting to get some help from some other people because their troops are starting to diminish a little bit. But these are a lot of civilians that are just fighting back. So it's pretty interesting just the heroic when you think about the president. Was it Zelensky? You know, that is putting up this courageous fight and not leaving, where you would think a lot of people that in that position would not put themselves in harm's way where certain things could happen to them, but for him to stay out there where all of this is happening. You know, so I think that's one of the things that has brought a lot of people to, you know, with the heartfelt concerns where, you know, you're not going to find, you know, I'll just take our former president or any of our presidents, that would probably stay in a situation where something was bad that was happening. They would go somewhere safe where they more than likely aren't going to be bombed. You know, so I think they're looking at that, and you know, and this is why when he made his speech a couple days ago, and I pretty much he got something he's making. Talking to the United Nations and pleading with the U.S. to, you know, do this no-fly zone and stuff. But they don't want to do it because, again, they believe that's going to be the cause of World War III. I mean, isn't this with that? I mean, I think we're there already. Your thoughts?
Well, I think Zelensky wants to play the just 1 second.
You said Zelensky wants to play the what?
I think Zelensky is playing the long game. He wants to be the hero. But
right.
I mean, these people that are staying, you know, I don't have a problem with people and their own patriotism. So yeah, they got a reason.
Right.
Their country probably treated them well. So they can go.
Mm-hmm.
Stay, fight for
right.
your country. But my country has not shown itself to be one that I need to stand up and fight for. But But I applaud these people that want to stay to the death, that want to defend their land, defend their home, you know, play the hero. But at this point, that's not I'm shoot. Not me.
Yeah. You know, it's really something how they're getting a lot of coverage on it. There was a UFC fighter that made a comment that he's from, I think, some southern state, and if they brought the war to the United States, he would just dig his boots in the soil and, you know, and grab his guns and stuff like that, and he would, you know, very patriotic, and he would defend the land. Nobody's going to make him leave his property, you know, and like you said, I understand people that feel that they've been treated fairly, and they have that love and trust and feel for where they are and what others have done for them, that they're willing to, you know, put their lives on the line to, you know, preserve it for others. I mean, I get that. But I also get very strongly and wholeheartedly what you're saying in regards to my country has not treated me with those welcoming arms. And so you even think about, you know, like I said, I mentioned this girl, Brittany Griner, and why isn't this big uproar to get her out? You know, like you said, President Clinton or one of our presidents went to go after other people that were, you know, being held in other countries. I remember Muhammad Ali, you know, offered himself in that, was that the 70s in Iraq? For some of the
hostages
that
these
they had.
People go over there, but the fact they can't go over there for this woman, that just shows you what they think.
Yeah. Right.
That would have been
an easy
couple lawyers, he backed her on out. It just shows you, and I hope.
Yeah, and that, you know, that really is troublesome to me, because I was reading I read a lot of stuff on Twitter, because she's married to her spouse's name, but, you know, Cheryl or something like that, but they were just talking about, we miss you, we're praying for you, we're trying to, you know, we're hoping that you can get here soon. And you know, so that NBA family, her friends, her, you know, loved ones, you know, they're out there and they're putting information out there. And you would think somebody that is recognized, you know, a sports celebrity, and like, and then they're overseas playing basketball in Russia. And one of the reasons, like, they go out of state, out of the country, is because the money. Money is better. I mean, they're not, they don't make as much money. And so you think about that. And that's all over. But, you know, we're, you know, sometimes treated a lot better in other places than we are at home. We don't know that until we go. A lot of us have never left the soil of the United States. You know, on the other hand, I've traveled a lot in my days when I was fighting and stuff like that. You know, so I've got a chance to see things, and I see things better and worse. You know, so you have your pluses and your minuses, but when you have certain people that tell the story, you know, you don't know what truth or lies. You really don't know what you're getting. You know, but some of the stuff that we're seeing, you know, and then when I also think about, you know, when they keep talking about how bad Putin is, but we got this relationship with him, you know, where we're getting, you know, part of our oil from him, and like you said, 1%, and then they were saying that there's a 3%, they're going to be 3% of our, because the rest of it, I guess, comes from Ukraine, and so they were saying 3%. But so why, when you think that low percentage, all right, that we they could jump it up just that much, you know. And so
there's something in there. Somebody is benefiting from that 1%, and that's these lawmakers, somebody. But still, as far as why my gas is going up, they're not, you know, just to get me on the bandwagon. They want to sell that media story, that farcity. So I don't know. It's, you know, not my fight at this point.
Right. You know, what do you think, you know, we got a lot of these young people, you know, you got all these different rallies, and, you know, they're coming up with different monies and stuff like that, but they're saying what they need is they need, you know, they need planes. They need a lot of different things, and I don't know if you've been keeping up with, I mean, you already said, you know, it's not my fight, and I'm not, you know, I mean, they've just kind of put a bad taste in your mouth. And I do get that because I try not to get myself saturated with a lot of what's going on because, man, it's tough for me to go back and forth to the store, you know, and not because I'm afraid of other people that look like me. Sometimes somebody might look at me a certain way, and I say, and I mean a law enforcement person. Even though that's the job that I did for 18 years, you know, I'm still looked upon as somebody that could be a threat. And so I walk around with that uncomfortableness, you know, and we're just so used to just dealing with those situations on a regular basis and stuff. And, you know, it hasn't changed. It hasn't changed in all these years, you know.
They want us to. That feeling that you're walking around with is a bit of trauma, and that's what they want to do. They want to traumatize us because to the point where we unconsciously feel these things, you know, feel some sort of way about who we are, and it's a formula. It's like when they used to have the Knight Riders down in the South.
Right.
Because, you know, be aware that we're looking at you like this. That's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
They succeeded. They want me to run around worried about my sons being out there. You know, until they can make me unconsciously worried every moment, that was their goal.
Mm. Yeah, and I tell you, you know, like right. And I think part of, and not to say that, I mean that this is, I don't know, you know, there's this thing where we've been conditioned to care for other people more so than we care for ourselves. You know, because, you know, if you go back into slavery, they've always had us nursing, breastfeeding their own baby. You know, they don't like us, but they would breastfeed us. They don't like us, but they would rape our women. And they would, you know, rape the men. They would castrate the men. They would do all types of horrific things to break down the family structure and promote this. You can't protect your wife because if I decide I want her, I can do this. I mean, so we're still fighting so many different battles at home dealing with this trauma. And some of us, you know, I had a young lady on the show last week, Tisa Dawn. And well, she so eloquently put so many different things out there as far as the different energy that we walk around with. And she said, one of the things that just kind of stuck with me, I mean, many things, but she was talking about how people are sleepwalking and how people, you know, you don't want to wake some of these people up. You might wake them up and, you know, and something crazy is going to happen. You know, they're not in tune with what's going on right now. This is why they're walking a certain way. They might become violent. You know, you don't know where they're at. And how some people receive you and how some people may not receive you. You know, I mean, you know this and I know this. We can talk to, we both can tell somebody, our kids, the same thing. And we tell them every day for the last 5 to 10 years. And some stranger walked in and said something to them, but this stranger is on the same frequency that they're on, and they repeat the same thing we said, and then all of a sudden the kid says, oh, why? I wish somebody would have told you that sooner. But this is,
exactly,
you know, but this is, you know, but this is what we deal with so much. And so, so much of, so many of us are just out of sync with what's going on. And because we're walking around with so much trauma, and, you know, you need to have some love in your heart. But at the same time, there's still some ugly things going on. We need to prepare to deal with those aspects of things, too. And there's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes we have to fight to maintain our health and our wealth. I mean, that's part of it, you know. And so, I mean, I can't imagine what some of these people that have families and you know, what they're doing, you know, how they feel, and, you know. But at the same time, we people that are in Africa, different parts of Africa, and everything that's going on. And it's a lot that we don't know because they don't talk about it, you know. And so why isn't that coverage there? Just because how we are just so marginalized. And so it really throws. I'm not trying to be negative on the trauma that other people are going through, but at the same time, I do recognize that you don't care about my trauma. And you benefit by not talking about it, by promoting a certain narrative about what type of people we are. And then also that, you know, making people insensitive to our trauma, to our hurt, to our pain, to our suffering. And so, yeah, like you said, they have done a masterful job of marketing us to be some of the worst people on the planet, but when you look at what's going on, and I mean, that is not us that's dropping these bombs and destroying these people all over the world. You know, never has been. You know, we're just not in those situations of power and stuff, and we were in had numbers and stuff like that, but you know, we weren't looking to destroy people and take them over and stuff. And there, yeah, man, I can't think of what. I don't know. Maybe you can help me out. Do you remember the letter that Christopher Columbus wrote about the Indians and what type of people they were? And he talked about how they were peaceful, loving, and trusting people, and they would help you and do anything for you. And he said that they would make great slaves and they would be easy to slaughter.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
You know, so when you think about, you know, things like that, and you're talking about, and then later on we decide we took Christopher Columbus Day off the book, you know, because now there's kind of what we call not critical race. Is that critical race? No, it's not. Is that critical race?
Yes, critical.
Where they want
race
to learn about what really went on, and so they want to move some of these people that we took and worshiped for so long. There was a guy that was talking about the Declaration of Independence. I can't think of his name. He was on The View a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about, you know, the Declaration of Independence was not written, you know, with us in mind. They didn't ask us how we built it. And the people that wrote it, most of them had slaves. So we weren't being considered in those thoughts. So when you sit and you think, or we talk about not having this great concern, no, we don't hate people like the way people project that we do. But we do, like most other ethnic groups of people, there is a higher percentage of white people that kill white people, and Asian and so forth. Those are just the numbers that you're dealing with. You know, you have 80 plus
people, 80 white people are killed by 80% of white people are killed by 80 plus percent of white by white people, not by black people. And the same numbers are that of black people and stuff like that. And that's generally because people live together, and so when they do have these conflicts, it's easier for people to engage and seek vengeance or and hurt other people just because they live in close proximity to each other. And so that's what the numbers look like for all ethnic groups, but that's not how they talk about it. They just talk about one. So you don't hear them talk about, you know, these different things and stuff like that. So we have a lot to think about in regards to how we need to prepare ourselves to move forward with all of this. I mean, is this a distraction, you know, this war? Or even, you know, it's hard not to think about it. Because at some point, I think that, you know, our young people are going to get involved. You know? I mean, we talked about, yeah, it could be a nuclear war and everybody, I mean, some people, I mean, think that way, that people are just going to release their bombs and destroy the world. You know, but they've been able to do that, you know, for years, and it hasn't been done. So what puts us closer to the edge now? Do you think because Putin has been crazy and been this way for years, or was somebody there might stop it? I mean, we had that fear. Some people had that fear when Trump was in office. I mean, your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I do not know, but it's so much, but it's so calculated. And when you go back to what you were saying with it's all about what they want the masses to believe. And they're very good at planting seeds, strategic seeds of what they believe about us. Like you said, white people killing white people at such a higher rate. But yet, but there's no name for it. They made a name for ours called black on black crime. Nobody running around saying, "Ooh, white on white crime." So they decided that was going to be a marketing boost for somewhat, you know. So there's no label attached to that, and it's clearly the statistics show that, you know, that there it's a much higher rate.
Right. And you know what? And I'm glad you said that and pointed that out. I mean, because even when you look at this war thing, I mean, it's white on white. But at the same time, when they do throw black people in the mix, you know, and these are people that are generally students that are there, and some people do live there. But again, they're being targeted because of the color of their skin. You know, they're not involved in this war. Most of them are there because they're students. Or working there for some specific reason with some company or whatever, but being targeted. So this is, you know, just an ugly thing altogether when, you know, our people are being targeted, we just don't seem to have an answer on how we need to move forward with a lot of this. So many times, like I said, we jump on this bandwagon where we want to be the savior for everybody. And, you know, when I talk about, and I repeat this, I'll repeat this over and over again, because I have this conversation. And I think, you know, you made a really good point when you said that, you know, they even made a name for us when they said black on black crime, if you don't hear them say white on white crime and stuff like that. But at the same time, we take that narrative and we condemn each other on that all the time. Well, why y'all got to stop killing each other? And I don't want to hear anything about police violence or anything until y'all stop killing each other. You know, and so how do you...
Exactly.
I hate when people
equate that. They make false equations, false equivalency. I hate that. And black people are the ones that I hear saying it.
Right. I mean, what response would you give them in regard to that? I mean, what would you say if I said that?
My same response would, because it falls into what you had said earlier about we're our own worst enemy. That's basically another way that they want to say it.
Yeah.
And my response is this narrative, this structure that they've wrapped us in, I believe is in Genesis 4, what they want to call black on black crime. We're not just going to run around killing, you know, as human beings, as black Africans. We're not just going to naturally run around and do that. Our community has been squeezed so much so that they have this community trauma. So that it's the same answer, because when they say we're our own worst enemy, to me that's the same as saying, you know what, we're not going to take care of this until you take care of that. You know, it's a false equivalency, and that is my answer is the same on that one.
Okay. Now I got a question. I mean, the kids are very understanding about so many different things, and you keep them well educated on so many different things that's going on. And is this something that they're even, you know, talking about? You know, I mean, do they understand or know what's going on in regards to the war in Russia and Ukraine?
No, because they're not. I mean, they know what they're taught at school about it, but I'm not at home talking about the, you know, poor Ukraine. I'm talking about, okay, what do we need to do about our situation here?
Yeah.
Your daily life. How are we fighting oppression here? Because if we don't care, nobody else don't care.
No
one is coming to save us. I don't know who said that or who wrote that, but it said no one is coming to save us. So we talk a lot about, you know what, we got to save us. So that's what we're focusing on. The larger picture is irrelevant to them at this time, because if they do the nuclear bomb, then we're all wiped out. I'm talking to them about how you survive day to day in an oppressive society. So answering your question, no, we've not drilled down on this Ukraine situation at all.
And I was just, and I'm just wondering sometimes, because, you know, you're not at school, but, you know, do they, you know, I was just wondering, are they putting it out in these kids' minds? Because some kids are having some trauma behind it because, you know, this is what they watch. I mean, a lot of parents don't control what their kids watch on TV. They go home and watch it. But the news is saturating. It's, you know, like I can go and turn the TV on and I'm going to see something. I'm going to see ruins of a city where bombs and see people being carried off and bodies being walked over and people crying. And I mean, they're showing that 24/7. And so, man, you know, when you think about those different things, they said when we had the reason why the movement went so big in the 60s was because, you know, they started putting some of this stuff on television. They started showing, you know, the brutality, you know, where was that, over the bridge in Selma, Alabama? You know, they showed the sticking dogs on people and being beaten by police officers. And so there was a different response because they saw that.
Well, I think there was a different response among... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I said it was a different response, but it wasn't always immediate stuff like that, because there was consideration. Like, I think they deserved it, but then they started, you know, because, you know, we just got so many different levels of concern where people look at us a certain way. You know, if it happens to some dark-skinned black person, nobody cares, because that's considered the worst of us. You know, so we got this colorism thing that's going on. But if it's a fair-skinned person, and we understand how white people think, and so when they did the movement with Rosa Parks that were on the bus that didn't give up the seat, but you know, she's a light-skinned person, and you know, and people would be offended, and I think the police officers knew that if they would rough her up and this and that. But, you know, there were other, she wasn't the first person. And that young girl, I think she was 15 years old, she was pregnant, but she was a darker complexion person, she was a bigger person, and, you know, and they always stereotype, you know, us being able to take a lot of physical harm. You know, they could beat us a lot and so forth. They could get away with doing these different type of things. So, you know, they planted that seed a long time ago in regards to being able to inflict harm on us, and we're okay. So a lot of people can look at that and not even blink, you know, or think about this. And so I think about all of that when I think about what's going on. I mean, I have a bleeding heart for people being brutalized and killed senselessly, but at the same time, I don't say I don't care, but it's just that, man, we really need to work on us and these different concerns kind of move us away from that, you know, operating. Thinking that way, because if our energy is poured in another direction before we get reset, and then, oh, hey, we still got to deal with this because I still got to get from A to B tonight, and this could happen. Not because I did something wrong, because there's people out there that don't like me that are supposed to protect and serve and so forth and this and that, and or we got a Karen out there that might point her finger at me and, you know, and what. Weaponize the police against me because something she said, and then they become, you know, me not putting my hands up or not following their directions or, you know, all kinds of different stuff. I mean, too many silly things that happen to people that look like us, and like you said, we're not desensitized to what's going on in other. We're just not that way, but it's still an ugly situation, what's going on. But I really do have to look at my own immediate family and community and what they're pouring into us. I don't see a lot of positivity, you know. So it's an ugly situation either way it goes. But we have to find a way to navigate through this and make this thing work positively for us with a good outcome.
Definitely.
I'm going to just wondering, you know, like with some of the structure that we have in regards to this operation. I haven't heard, I mean, I haven't listened a whole lot, but so you got our vice president and Kamala Harris, and she's gotten a lot of support because of her alignment with a sorority. No, wait a minute. Yeah, sorority. Yeah. And because she went to a HBCU. But at the same time, a lot of promises that they made, they haven't fulfilled for a lot of the black people that supported them in getting it, winning the election. And who else did we just break over with millions, or did we spend billions of dollars for getting the refugees from, was it Iraq?
Yes, right. And then making, or did we allow them to come in? I cannot remember. But any refugee, well, I want to go back to what you were saying about the black man, and they spent a lot of money marketing us as inhuman all the way back to slavery. So, you know, so now this is just the legacy of this, you know, three-fifths of a person. And sort of, you know, they use the Bible even to justify us as human.
Yeah.
So this is just the legacy of this, you know, and it's still ingrained. They worried about CRT. It's still ingrained in the back of these white people. It's in their DNA at this point that we are not
human
for some people. So that's, we are fighting for basic human rights here in America. But then touching on Kamala Harris and Biden, well, yeah, they didn't fulfill a lot of promises, and that nobody ever does. So I think we see these promises, and we never hold anybody accountable.
Right.
That's like a comedy show. This whole election thing with these promises is a comedy. You just pick who you think is the better person. Don't even think these promises are going to get fulfilled. But also, You know, there's so much that's going on after Trump. The fact that I'm not seeing him on TV every day, this administration was a win for me. And my personal trauma from seeing his stupidity every single day is just, the fact that I don't have that. I'm fine. I don't even know what Joe Biden is doing. I hate that I don't. But the fact that I don't have to, I don't even have to worry. I don't have to worry. You know, I'm just hoping that he was the best person at the time. I don't expect anything to be fulfilled because I never do from American elections. And I'm just glad that I am not traumatized daily by this fool. Joe Biden could be blowing balloons in the Oval Office for all I care, and I hate to say it at this point. I'm not traumatized by him. I have a very low bar for the presidency after Donald Trump. It's so low that I'm just like, just let me not be traumatized daily, and that was a win.
Yeah. And you know what? I think one of the reasons that not so much, I mean, because the bottom line is they're getting media coverage on everything that's going on in Ukraine. But one of the other things that's going on, they're also focusing on the heroic efforts and the attitude of Zelensky. And so that's a model. That's a look of a person that's a president. I mean, he's in army gear. And he's running around and he's staying there and he's in these different places. And I'm sure he's well protected, but it's still something that you don't expect to see out of any of the presidents that we've ever had. You know, and so
that's
some of the popularity.
They live in a culture of machismo.
Yeah.
They expect their people to do that. And so, you know, if that's what he wants to do, that's how they do it. It's a male-dominated society to an extent over there in the Ukraine. Plus, he's up against this other man that's uber machismo. The Russian guy. He's just virility and all this. He rides around on a white horse with no shirt on.
Right.
So that whole Ukrainian setup is around this. So I'm not, he's in that game, and that's the game they're playing. That's what his country validates. It looks silly, but yeah, a hero, no, but he's following the lead of his heritage. That's what they do.
Yes, most definitely. But you know, like I said, we seem to be cut of a different cloth. I mean, like I said, Trump, when he was in office, he talked tough, but you know what was in something happened and he jumped off the stage. He found somebody was coming after him and people jumped. And then what we had, somebody threw a shoe at President Bush when he was out there. It's just a different mentality, when you look at some of the support and the structure in regards to these different things from place to place. And I think they do that to try to say that U.S. is so much better because that wouldn't happen here. You know, but at the same time, we've demonized and destroyed, you know, a lot of these black and brown communities for, you know, just for profit. You know, dropping bombs. Who did we drop a bomb in? That was in 84, a community in, was that in L.A. or St. Louis? But I'll have to look back into that. But usually I keep that stuff in my head pretty good and stuff like that. But I kind of lost my thought on that one. But yeah, I don't think that there's a lot of people we talk about, the violence that goes on on the street. And when we talk about it, you know, like these active shooters and all these different ways that we just have to live and think because of what's going on with all this violence, you know, with this coronavirus. And now they're talking about a new variant, so many different things. So they talk about the mental health stuff. But, you know, we just have, like you said, the trauma from just generational trauma from everything that we went through and stuff is part of what, you know, troubling a lot of the souls and spirits of black and brown people, period. And this system is set up that way. So it's hard for a lot of us to be thinking a certain kind of way. And, you know, like I said, we're not ugly people because there's a lot of black law enforcement officers, but you don't find them, you know, senselessly killing white adults or kids. You know, but that's something that they can do and be justified. And, you know, I do a lot of security work, and even when you look at security, you don't even find a lot of, you know, you'll find white security people that are armed killing people of color and stuff, but you don't find the black officers killing white people. And because they understand, you know, the importance that they put on the value of a white person. You know, we saw that when they started talking about the war in Ukraine, when they were saying, these are not like your regular refugees. These are middle-class people. These are white, blue-eyed people. These are well-dressed people. I mean, putting all that kind of stuff out there, you know, I mean, the dress, the clothing you wear makes you that much better of a person. You know, you can dress up anybody. Well, Jeffrey Dahmer, I don't know how he dressed and stuff like that. I thought he dressed pretty decent, but that didn't make him a decent person. I mean, he was still eating people. That was, you know, he was a psychotic killer and stuff like that, you know. He did what he did, but, you know, we have ways of, you know, demonizing one group of people and uplifting or you know, others when he should. You heard even Trump, how he, when he was in office, how he talked about Putin. And then even right now, he talks about he would have been able to handle Putin. And Biden doesn't know what he's doing. So I don't think none of those guys really know a whole lot of what, you know, but there's, I don't know. There's some intimidation. You know, this is as far as, you know, everybody's got these major weapons. Yeah. Who's going to use what? But anyway, any closing thoughts? We're near the end of the show. Your thoughts about anything else?
Well, I just really enjoyed being a part of the discussion and finding out so much about this because, like I said, I did not pay that. You know, I just felt that I did not need to pay that much attention. I know what's going on over there, but I can't
right.
put my emotions into it. So let's say like that, I have an awareness. But no, but I just really enjoyed being a part of the discussion so that we could kind of delve into how it does at some point link into our social consciousness as far as black Americans, you know, Brittany Griner over there, the Nigerians. So yeah, no, but thank you for inviting me.
No, not a problem. And you know, this is I'm going to have, I should have, I'm going to make sure, I shouldn't say her name. I'm going to say it because I'm pretty sure she's going to be Bridget Wilder. She's a wellness coach. And this is being Women's Month. I wanted to get the woman's perspective, and this is what you gave me. And, you know, as a mother and as an educator and a parent, you know, we got to navigate ourselves through these different situations, and you know, we have our own war that we're fighting every day, and to look at
exactly.
what happens in other places, but how they structure it, so we have no choice but to look at it and think about it. But some of us have found other ways to, you know, get the job done and focus on what we need to do to uplift, you know, liberate our people. So I appreciate you for what you do and your husband, and I'm so glad that you guys entrust me with your kids so that, you know, I get a lot of
Uncle Horace. And the dogs.
We ain't gonna forget them.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you be well and you take care.
All right, thank you. And thank you for being on the show. So we had Dior Smith on the show, Warriors Way, continuing the fight. If you guys have any questions, concerns, you can always contact me via email at warriorsway101@gmail.com. warriorsway101@gmail.com. Continuing the fight. And our call-in number is 516-418-5674, 516-418-5674. Thanks again for putting in tonight. And we'll be back next week. Again, we should have Bridget Wilder on. She's a wellness coach, and she has some interesting things in regards to how we need to move around our health being wealth. We had Kenza Dawn on here, and she just laid out some knowledge about a week ago. And so we're going to continue this with another amazing woman that she'll tell you about some of the things that she did. And I'm not going to give you a whole lot of her story because I just wanted to put it out in her words. And stuff. But we'll do that. So, again, thank you for joining us tonight, and so on.
When the glory comes, it will be out, it will be out. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory.
Oh,
the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, the spirit is revisiting us. True and living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be out. It will be out.
Man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the league of justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory, the coming of the Lord. My eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be out. It will be out. Oh,
glory.
Oh,
thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.